Gary, I hope you're doing well.
I am. Enjoy batting leadoff for you. Don't have to worry about having anybody to drive me in. Justin Upton and Hayward are gone, so the Braves are moving on to 2016 and beyond.
Look, I am not going to pretend that I follow that very closely, because I don't. I do know that those are two guys that Braves fans were very much excited about a couple of years ago. But fill me in. What's the deal? Why is that not worked out, and why do they feel like they have to go ahead and unload those guys now, I guess, in the last year? For at least one of them, it's the last year of a contract, so I guess you're going ahead and getting something if you don't feel like you're going to sign them to a long-term deal.
Exactly, and they were not going to re-sign up then after this season, and they've got the new ballpark coming in 2017, and John Hart took over, went ahead and decided to take over the general manager's position, and as all of John sure holds his confidence and has been given a green light to do this, rebuild this club the way that he wants to. And, you know, as a guy that's followed the Braves for a long time, Chris, I kind of like it. I've often said, as good as the Braves have been, that run they had in, from the 90s, early 90s into the mid-2000s, they still only won one world championship, one less than the Marlins.
Right.
And, they've kind of carried themselves, kind of like the Yankees a little bit. They did have consistent winning, but they didn't win championships. And then, after the season they had in 2013, expectations for 2014 were off the charts. They started well, and then they just collapsed. And way too many strikeouts in that lineup. Not an ability to move runners over. Couldn't manufacture any runs at all. And just were a poor offensive club. And then they had some injuries with their pitching, and it just got away from them. And now a lot of big, salaries on that team, and a lot of salaries where the salaries were not in, line with production. Now, Justin Upton was one of their better offensive players, but again, weren't going to re-sign him. Traded in the Padres for prospects, including a kid named Pride, who's an excellent left-handed pitching prospect that could be a major factor going forward. Hayward's disappointing because he was such a good guy in the community and loved over there in Atlanta. But, it's like John Hart said, it's not like, he said, I don't know why everybody's getting so upset. It's not like I'm breaking up the 27 Yankees here. This was a bad team.
Right.
And do you bring all these guys back and just say, well, we hope this year it all comes together? Or do you look at where this team has holes and you start trying to fill them, put together the best club you can, and move forward for the future? They're going to do it with pitching. There's no doubt about it. They're going to get back to the old Atlanta formula and try to have a dominant pitching staff. And in the National League, that still counts. But, this is going to be, interesting to see what happens. And then this year, let's just be honest, in 2015, they'll play the best they can, but it's not going to be a contending club. But they are building for the future, and I don't really have any issue with it. If they had won last year, won the division, got into the playoffs, then maybe you could say, hey, we're going to bring this team back. But the way that they collapsed, I think it's the right move.
Yeah, speaking of pitching, and with definitely the local tie, about as local as it gets, a guy that played high school ball in Tuscaloosa, then played, of course, a great career at the University of Alabama, David Robertson, changing pinstripes from the Yankees to the White Sox. We knew that a week ago. Became official this week, but great for David, and great that he has positioned himself professionally, that you can walk away from a $40 million offer, I guess, or close to it, with the Yankees to go somewhere else for more.
Absolutely. In fact, the qualifying offer he got initially from New York for 1 year was over $15 million. Think about that. Let that marinate for a moment. But, he wanted 4 years or more, and, the White Sox stepped up to the plate and gave him an incredible deal with long, term security for him and his family, and he's set. I think Yankees fans are disappointed. I went over and read a couple of their blogs and read some of their fan sites, because he was a very popular player. We know what he's done around here locally in Tuscaloosa for people. He was just as active in the community up there in New York City. So I think Yankees fans are disappointed to see him go, but it is a business, and they wanted him back, but they did not want him back at the same level. Obviously, the Chicago wanted to sign him, and I think it's just 4 years in that $46 to $48 million range, and that's a lot of money for a contending club. They've really helped themselves. Of course, got some market too as a starting pitcher from Oakland, and now they've got their closer, so they look like they're going to have a really, really good team. And it's not too bad when you think about a kid from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, that plays in New York City. and then his second stop is Chicago. You know, so that's not too bad.
That's a pretty good deal indeed. Gary Harris joining us on our Stella Artois Hotline presented by Green Beverage. And, Gary, I was, of course, earlier in the week in Wichita, Kansas with Alabama basketball, a game that I won't say they had firmly in control of, because there's not a I don't know that there is such thing in college basketball, even with 5.5 minutes to go, but it was a whole lot better spot than most people anticipated. A tough loss at a very tough place to play, and one that would have meant a great deal to Anthony Grant and his program if they'd been able to hang on.
See, that's why I brought up baseball I was trying to delay talking about this. Of course, you were there calling it, and I was just watching it on television, but I got to tell you what, it was just as painful watching it on TV, if not more so, you know, when you've got Dick Vitale there describing every painful possession down the stretch there. You know, I'm probably like everybody else. I see it from two different aspects. First of all, you have to be thrilled that you went into that environment, and after Shannon Hale hit that three with 5:50 to go, you've got an 11-point lead, 51-40. You're right. You and I, probably everybody else, never thought that would be the case. You were hoping Alabama would have a chance late, but not be up 11 with under six to play. The flip side of that is, I already used the term collapse for the Braves, but, you know, honestly, in regards to the outcome, it was a collapse. I mean, you don't score another field goal the rest of the way. You get one free throw. And even then, if Randolph's able to make both free throws, and we know what a good free throw shooter he is, you probably have an opportunity for overtime. I mean, they did nothing down the stretch that gave them a chance to win the game, because let's be honest, it was still all Wichita State could do to pull it out. I mean, if you make one field goal anywhere in that time frame, just one, if you can just find a way to get it in the bucket one time, if you can just get it past half court. Now, a whole other box of worms is the fact that the kind of pressure that they turned up and they had the ability to turn Alabama over without fouling is, you know, another story. But that's how you build a 23-game home court winning streak, I guess, is you can do a lot of things and find ways to win without fouling. So it's disappointing from the standpoint that you did everything that you needed to do for 35-plus minutes to be in position to win the game, and then in the final 5 minutes or so, you cannot make a play. I mean, not a single play. And, you know, and I know final possession, they had time, and I don't have any issue with letting Leroy Randolph take it there. He gets the ball knocked out. Fortunately, Alabama came up with it in 1.2 seconds. And, you know, Cooper got a decent look. You know, you don't have a lot of time there. Looking back at it, when Tarrant threw it into him and Tarrant stepped in, Tarrant, you know, was wide open. But I don't know if Coop would have had time to, you know, caught the ball, got it back to Tarrant, and then got a shot off anyway. So, at 1.2 seconds, you just do the best you can. But, you know, the bottom line is, come tournament time, that would have been one heck of a resume win. I mean, you're talking about a team that had won 22 straight home games and only lost one game this year, did not lose a single game last year until the NCAA tournament against Kentucky, and just a marvelous basketball team with a lot of experience. And that could have been one of those wins that could be the difference if you're sitting on the bubble from getting in and not making it. So, you know, nothing you can do about it now, like Coach Grant said yesterday, but learn from it and move forward. Got a game tonight against Stillman. Got a game on Sunday, and try to take advantage of this five-game home, home court advantage that you've got coming up, five straight games at home, and win some games and get in the conference play and do the best you can. But that is a opportunity loss, Chris. There's just no way to sugarcoat it. You've got it there in the palm of your hand, and you don't finish it. And then that brings up questions again about finishing. I mean, just, you know, as difficult as it has been for this team to win a game on the road, the longer, and I know you can say, well, they won, you know, some, you know, games away from Cullen Coliseum, but I'm talking about true road games here.
Right.
As difficult as it has been to win a game in a true road environment, that just adds more questions to it. You know, you just, some point they're going to have to break through, because let's be honest, if they don't find a way to win some games on the road in the SEC, they'll have no chance to get into the NCAA tournament.
I agree. I do think part of what has been tough, not last year, because last year was one where the season just got away, but in a couple of other seasons prior to that, you had virtually no chance of gaining respect after the end of December because the league itself wasn't good enough. There weren't enough good teams where you had opportunities to win games and get enough credit. You know, the year that Alabama finished second, or I guess twice they finished second in the league and didn't get in the NCAA tournament. I get the feeling, I want your opinion on this, there will be more of those opportunities once we get into conference play. You got to win the rest of them before Christmas. You've got to win UCLA. I totally believe that. But once you get into league play, I think there are going to be some opportunities. And I'm not talking Kentucky because, frankly, I don't think that's realistic. I think they are that good. But there will be some others that I think you will get credit for with the committee as we get into conference action.
I think so. I mean, I think the conference is better than it was last year. I mean, I look at a team like LSU, really improved ball team. That would be a quality win on the road if you could win in Baton Rouge. Obviously, you know, home as well. Arkansas is another team that would be a big win for Alabama. Obviously Florida is still very well respected. They've lost some games, but they played an incredible schedule. And you mentioned Kentucky. It may not be probable, but still they're on the schedule. You got a shot at them, and we know what a win over Kentucky would do. You might just punch your ticket right there. They're so highly regarded. So I do think the SEC provides opportunities this season that maybe it hasn't in the last couple of years. So you're right. You know, make some hay here. These next several ball games, including UCLA, pad your wins, get into conference, have a solid year in the conference, and see what happens. So I know some people have written that the Wichita State loss has doomed Alabama. I'm with you. I don't see it that way. I think there's way too much basketball left. I know it's disappointing, but I'm not going to go that far yet. I think there's a lot more opportunities for Alabama to prove they're an NCAA tournament-worthy team, and I think they are. I mean, I will say this. Again, you know, the way the math works out, and Chris, you'll have to help me here now. I don't know if it's officially anymore 65, 68, whatever it is, but
yeah.
I definitely think Alabama's one of the top, 60-plus teams in the country.
Well, now, I think they're going to have a chance to show that, and you're talking about the math, Gary. I talked about this on, I guess if the game was Tuesday, it would have been Wednesday morning. You lose that game, and yet you still climb 12 points in the RPI to 21st.
That's right.
I mean, it's a formula that Gottfried figured out most years with your schedule, you can play your way into the tournament, even with just a couple of key wins and some other respectable games, depending on how they look RPI-wise. And that's why I think the schedule will greatly benefit Alabama if they can win some of those key ball games that they'll have over the next 2.5 months.
I agree, and I think this team is good enough to do it. So that's the goal. I know it's the goal for the team. I think it should be the goal for the fans. And, I know school's out right now, but tonight even, an opportunity to see Alabama at home against an in-town rival. And, I know Stillman's a Division II school, but they've got a good basketball team. You can bring a toy out and get free admission. So it's a great opportunity there. And then, as we said, home game stacked up here for a while and get into SEC play. So I hope the fans will respond. This is a much more enjoyable team to watch than last year's team, in my opinion. And, again, I haven't seen them up close like you have, mainly from afar. These start times have been killing me as a sports
fan. You and me both, brother.
I can't get out to these 8 o'clock tips, and then tonight, 6 o'clock when I'm on the air. But I think it's a better basketball team. I think it's a more entertaining team. I think it's a closer team. They seem to have guys that like playing the game and like each other, and Coach Grant's doing a good job with them. So, yeah, man, this is basketball. I mean, we really don't even get going good until January. So the whole season's in front of them, and I hope the fans will respond to this club and support them the way that they deserve to be supported. And I'm with you. I think they can make a push, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and just a quick note on Stillman, a team that's coming off of an overtime victory against Montevallo, a team that Alabama played, of course, in the exhibition game. So it's Division II team. It's one Alabama certainly should win. But Stillman, as you said, playing some pretty good basketball right now. We're talking with Gary Harris, WVUA Sports Director, on our Stella Artois Hotline presented by Green Beverage. Football practice resuming for the Crimson Tide. They're kind of in that next phase now, I guess, of trying to get themselves pointed in the direction of Ohio State, even though I know that's not full bore just yet for Nick Saban's team.
Yeah, I went out on Tuesday when they resumed practice because I just really wanted to get a good up-close look at Bo Scarborough, and he looked great, by the way, for all the people that I know are curious about him. And obviously he isn't eligible for the Sugar Bowl, but he is practicing with the team while they're here in Tuscaloosa. But got a chance to be out there for the media viewing period, and they gave us a couple of periods, so it was a little bit longer than it is sometimes. And team looked great. I mean, they look fresh, as you might guess, after having about a 9-day layoff. They understand what's in front of them. They recognize the position that they put themselves in. And, you know, it's a very much a business approach with Alabama. It always is. The guys looked alert. They looked spry, and they're ready to go, and haven't interviewed a few of them this week. You know, they have a lot of respect for Ohio State. I think they understand that in terms of building a team, that Urban Meyer takes a lot of the same tactics and employs them that Nick Saban does, and builds his program the same way. Number one, meaning that you got to recruit top tier talent. And Ohio State, they're not as mature as a program under Urban Meyer as Alabama is under Nick Saban, but they got big time talent. They got players that have been recruited by everybody in the country. Even though they're on their third quarterback, they found ways to persevere and move on and won the Big Ten championship game 59-0. So you can't sleep on the Buckeyes. You know, I still think in this matchup, if both teams play their best, I think Alabama wins the game, Chris. But, you know, when you look at Ohio State, if Alabama does not play great, they turn it over. If they, you know, they stall in the red zone, then this is a team that can, of course, score points, and they can certainly win the game. So I think Alabama knows exactly what it's in for. I know that, Nick Saban is one of the best in the business, probably the best in the business, and he'll make it clear to them that Florida State and Oregon don't really matter right now. If you don't take care of Ohio State, there's not another opportunity. So I think they'll be focused and ready to go, and I think they'll have a great practice run here in Tuscaloosa. And when they get down to New Orleans, they'll start amping it up, and it'll be here before you know it.
I hear the comparison to Mississippi State in terms of the roster and what Ohio State has. Is that why people tend to feel as confident as they do about Alabama? And that's not a shot at Ohio State. It's not a shot at Mississippi State. But in terms of the matchup itself, that was one personnel-wise I know Bama people felt good about. And if Ohio State is being called a similar team to the Bulldogs, then I've got to think that might explain some of the upbeat feelings that we're experiencing right now going into the game.
Yeah, I think so. I think schematically, offensively, obviously there's a lot of parallels. You know, Dan Mullen learned under Urban Meyer, so the systems are similar. And regardless of who has been a quarterback for Ohio State, they're going to run the same system. Now, this guy, more of a drop-back, traditional pocket passer than the other two quarterbacks that they've employed. But, again, he put 59 points on the board. And defensively, they're really good up front, just like Mississippi State. That's the strength of their team. Their defensive lineman, of course, Joey Bosa, is just an absolute monster. He concerns me because I don't care if they line him up over Cam Robinson or they line him up over Austin Shepard. I mean, he can get off the edge, and he can fly, and, you know, he's a big guy, and when he gets to the quarterback, he can do some damage. So, but I think that's a fair comparison, and I understand Alabama fans, that making them feel comfortable. At the same time, you know, that was a tough ball game against Mississippi State, and Alabama got out to the 19-0 lead and kind of held on there. But I can see that. At the same time, if I'm an Alabama fan, that's reassuring on one hand. On the other hand, it lets you know that Ohio State's a really talented football team, because Mississippi State was as well, or is as well. So I like that example, but I don't know that comforts me too much, because I look back at the Mississippi State game and know full well that outcome could have been very, very different. You know, Alabama did what it had to do and jumped on them early, but in the second half, you know, kind of hung on there for dear life. So I think it's going to be a great ball game. Chris, I've told you this before, and I love the SEC and think the SEC is the best conference in the country, period. But I don't make the mistake of thinking that good football is not played at other places. And,
right.
Just because you won the SEC, to me, doesn't mean that you just guarantee to run through the playoff. I mean, I think Ohio State is a very, very capable team, and Alabama needs it. To borrow an Urban Meyer phrase here, Alabama needs to be on point against Ohio State. If they're on point, as I said, I'll take them every time. But if they don't play their best, the Buckeyes could get out of there with a win.
Last thing I'll let you run. There are conflicting reports. I think Bruce Feldman from Fox is the one that reported that the $8 million that came out yesterday, $8 million a year, for Harbaugh to go to Michigan was not an accurate number, that it was too high. Is Dan Mullen, in your mind, a fallback candidate for Michigan if they can't get him? Because if the standard now in the Big Ten is indeed Urban Meyer, a guy who led his team to the number one ranking in the country in Starkville, Mississippi, who learned a lot of what he knows under Urban, to me, would seem to be a pretty good fit if they can swallow their pride enough in hiring his former coordinator.
Yeah, first on Harbaugh, I think whether, you know, and Feldman, I saw that too, is the only one that's saying it's not $8 million plus. But regardless of whether it's $6 million, $7 million, or $8 million, for Jim Harbaugh, it simply comes down to, does he want to go coach college football again? Even though that's his alma mater. Because wherever he coaches, he's going to make a ton of money. He's already made a ton of money. He's making a ton of money with the 49ers. He can make a ton of money with the Raiders or any other NFL team that he decides he wants to go to if it doesn't work out in San Francisco. So it's very simply, it just comes down to what he wants to do. If Michigan doesn't land Harbaugh, I think they are in a very similar position to where Alabama was back in 2007. They need to make this hire count. It needs to be a hire that turns them around and gets them back on track, as you pointed out, particularly with Urban Meyer at Ohio State, because if they don't get on his level in a hurry, they're going to get lapped. Now, is Dan Mullen a fallback candidate? You know, I think he's done a great job at Mississippi State. If I were Michigan, I would have gone after Les Miles at LSU with everything that I had right up there with Harbaugh. It looks like that didn't happen. It looks like he stayed at LSU. So I don't know if fallback candidate is the right term, but I tell you this, I think Dan Mullen's got bravado. He's brash. He did, you know, work under Urban Meyer, so you have a built-in rivalry. He won't even say Ole Miss. He refers to Ole Miss as the school up north. And with that rivalry between Michigan and Ohio State, God only knows what he'll refer to Ohio State as if he gets to Ann Arbor. So if it does not work out with Jim Harbaugh, yeah, he's a guy I definitely think they'd have to take a look at. I mean, they can't fool around here. You know, they need a guy that's got some toughness. And if you can build a winner at Mississippi State, and they were within, you know, a couple of plays this year of being in this national championship playoff, you know, and they could have somehow beat Alabama, and then you don't know what the Ole Miss outcome, it might have been different. But he has put together a great product here in Starkville. And you got to say to yourself, if you're at Michigan, if he could do it at Mississippi State, what could he do here at Michigan? So right. It's going to be interesting to see what happens if at some point Harbaugh just goes ahead and officially says, I'm not going to Michigan, and to see where they turn. But if that happens, then yeah, I'd have to take a serious look at Dan Mullen if I'm the University of Michigan.